Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Join us every weekday at this time to discuss news, spend time in the Word, and receive answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday. Denny and I have had a couple of sessions in a row where we've talked about kind of setting up the structure of the Middle East, Israel, anti-Semitism, what things that God's asking us to look for with Denny's beautiful list of, here's what I see as things that we need to talk about, and we want to. Thank you for that list, by the way, Denny. Denny is about ready to head to Israel for an anti-Semitism contest, fab, you know, to be there, and just interesting what they'll say. It'll be really interesting when you come back to say what the heck happened. What do they think about? You know, what? How do they look at it? What is it? What is it they're trying to do? And you said this was the second one they've done one before.
Yeah, and I think this was kicked off obviously by the attack they experienced a few years back.
Yep. And that anti-Semitism is growing. One, and it again from a pure perspective is a little bit irrational. Because the arguments used about it and why they do it, and this is interesting because I've actually had some discussions with people who have had a perspective on this, is that, okay, you say you're against Israel. Why? They don't really know. They say, well, I think this whole, they're causing the whole thing. And I said, well, do you have evidence of that? Do you know that? No. Why against it? I just don't think it's right. You know, and it's kind of interesting to me that as we process that, and you process it over there, will be, where does that irrationality come from? So that'll be a fun one. And then last time, you know, kind of Denny gave an overview of numerous topics that we were going to pursue here over the next weeks and months. And if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to that list, because you may want to add to it or have questions about it that we'd love to hear from you. Add questions at abideministry.com. But Denny, the first thing you talked about was the dynamic of the superpowers, Russia, China, and the United States, which is true. And we all know that. By the way, Europe, which is interesting, they really are so weak. Their reaction to everything right now, particularly Greenland, is fear. They're making it. I had a conversation actually with somebody last night that's from Europe. And their perspective is what they're hearing is Trump is going to invade Greenland, you know, and what do we do? Because if we acquiesce, we're done, you know. And by the way, if he does, we can't fight it, you know. And so I'm thinking, are you sure you understand what's going on here? Because I would just say, I don't think he's going to invade Greenland. He's just playing a great poker game to get to a negotiation of things. And actually, because their fear, by the way, is that, here's what they said, NATO is going to be dissolved. And we're done. And Russia's coming after us, and we're done. And I said, I don't think so. I think this is about actually Russia and China and restructuring how it's going to be. And you're going to be protected because actually America knows you need to be protected. And they're not going to abandon you, which you're fearful of. Kind of that's an important topic. You know, why don't you lead out here in terms of things that you've thought through about these three superpowers? What's going on right now? What does it mean? And what do we start to consider about that?
China's emergence over the last 25, 30 years has really changed the dynamic a lot of this, because NATO, and it also causes you to want to rethink are some of these structures that have been in place when it was all about Russia versus the United States, like NATO. You know, that doesn't really work when the wrestling match is a three-way wrestling match. And so it seems, so that's one thing. And I, you know, the Trump changed the balance of NATO over the last, his two terms in office. They've had to contribute. They've had to stand up for their own defense. He has backed away from many of the European countries, waiting for them to become more self-sufficient in their own protection. We've also watched the United Nations just become, you know, a joke, much more controlled by the dynamics of smaller, very unfriendly nations.
Who, by the way, when you talk about anti-Semitism,
It's
a super majority of the United Nations is anti-Semitic. And again, they don't even know why, but they just are, you know, and so that's an interesting dynamic.
It is. And so we understood the fight between the Soviet Union and the United States in the 50s and 60s. It was the emergence of nuclear weapons and who was going to, and it was a military power battle. And, you know, we saw it tested and, you know, several times, but nothing really much came of it. It's the United States has become stronger since then. The Soviet Union has broken apart and become weaker. Now they're battling between old Soviet Union countries with each other. Much of what was the Soviet Union has affiliated strongly with Europe now. So the geopolitical thing that with Russia is that it's become weaker, although it's an incredibly powerful and bold and warrior nation. And then China, you know, that has completely changed. It's become an economic power. It became the manufacturer of the world. You know, how did we let that happen? But we did. And so we've got a current administration that's trying to reverse all of that. It's trying to move the industrial center away from China, back to the United States, back to countries that are friendly to the United States. And then the question is, well, who is friendly to the United States? And so what is our neighborhood? And which is a real interesting question, because there's some people that say what's really going on is China, Russia, and the United States are basically dividing up the world. You stay out of here, we'll stay out of there. I've heard that point being made. And that would mean that if I was in Taiwan, I'd be very worried right now.
Yeah.
As you can see, but I think the Taiwan issue might even be inevitable, because at least with this current administration, there isn't a chance in the world they would chase after the defense of a country that is basically in China's backyard. I don't think, but who knows? And that's a new thought. But suddenly Venezuela is in our neighborhood because it's in the same hemisphere. Is that it? Or it's one of the Americas. Greenland is somehow in our neighborhood because if you look at the map, right, it's as close to us as it is to Denmark. So I think the battle lines are less about military might and they're more about how do we avoid having points of conflict?
Yeah.
Seems like that's a lot of it. And it's economic as well as military. But it seems like there's a desire for the three countries to say, let's leave each other alone somehow.
Yeah. But they have, let's say, aggression in a variety of places that is trying to push things around and reestablish, you know, the relationship between the three parties so that, you know, and you think of Russia, that the one surprising thing to all of us is that when they invaded Ukraine, we all said, oh, that'll be about a month because they're way superior to them and they've got the technology and the manpower. They'll just overrun it. And remember at the time, we weren't going to do anything about it at all.
Yeah.
Other
than pour a lot of money into Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, is we're starting to realize that a lot of that money is going to pockets of corruption, you know, and which is unfortunately, that's the way of the world. So we're surprised that, here it is 4 years later and they're still fighting that war with no end in sight. I mean, no end, like it's not concluding. And, you know, Trump's trying to get in the middle of it of, oh, we'll do a peace. And all we hear is, yeah, Russia said they're going to do it. No, Ukraine's going to do it. No, Russia's going to do it. And nobody does it, you know, and so where's that going to go? One. And then two is that China, obviously, we know has developed economically and militarily into a true power. And the funny thing about China is that the United States led this is we transferred all of our men, not, you know, not literally all 100% of it, but a great majority of our manufacturing to China because of labor and cheap prices that drove us to say, well, that's a better thing to have them do it because they can do it cheaper than us. And I remember I was doing consulting for a manufacturing company and they were working with setting things up in China. And I was just evaluating their model. What's their economic model? How do they determine cost? And at the time, this is probably, you know, 20 years ago, they said, don't even measure labor at all. It's so insignificant because they're getting paid a dollar a day. It's so insignificant. All we care about is material cost and shipping. That's it. And it's cheaper, way, way cheaper than what we can do. So we're moving over there. We're going to move the manufacturing over there, which we did. So we funded the economic engine of China. And by the way, the rest of the world did too. And it's still, you know, still happening. Then they developed this military might But remember, China is driven by their own ideology, and they made a lot of mistakes with driving, for example, real estate development and buildings and commercial things that are truly right now today empty.
Yeah.
Because what they did is they kept extending debt to these companies, you know, which obviously was controlled by the government. And they have a massive debt problem and a economic problem that they can't really keep up with their own surpluses and have surpluses. So they have deficits. And because of lower demand, they're now suffering of it. So they got an economic problem, but they're militarily still powerful. But here's the question. And so there's a couple questions about this, Denny, is why do you think Russia hasn't settled with Ukraine and either overcome them or just come to a treaty with them? And two is why didn't China respond to us taking over Venezuela? But what's your thoughts on those two things?
I think the Russia issue, I think they're surprised they couldn't overplay them. And I, you know, there've been a lot of reports about how really unprepared for war Russia was.
Yeah.
Not just because they had underinvested in training and exercises, they probably haven't had as much experience, recent experience, with the kind of battle, the kind of fighting they have to do there as they used to be. And then they're importing warriors from other countries, you know, the Korean, North Koreans that are out, you know, mercenaries fighting. So they don't appear to be fighting it with the goal of winning, or they just wouldn't let themselves lose thousands of soldiers every month. So the surprise is, I think, how weak the Russian military has appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the last exposure we had in a big way to Russia in battle was in Afghanistan, and they couldn't prevail there either. I mean, before we got involved, and that was a long time ago. But it may well be that they just aren't, you know, they're willing to lose lots and lots of lives. They've got kind of got that built into them. We're just going to fight, you know, until it's over. But they're losing a lot of kids.
Yeah. And then what do you think is the reason that, you know, China did not respond to what we did in Venezuela, at least at the moment?
I think the answer to that probably is why haven't they gone ahead and taken back over Taiwan? Because that's real nearby. You know, they've got a massive Navy, which is probably why our Navy has moved into its position. If they were going to deal with Venezuela, they would have had to move a big chunk of their Navy over there, and they would have had to fight a battle that way. So that's the only thought I have, is it's not that important to them. I know it's a big oil supplier. I don't know. I think, or Trump just beat them to positioning. You know, he moved that Navy fast.
Yeah.
And sort of out of nowhere. There was no talk about, you know, there'd been a lot of talk from the beginning about whether or not Maduro was a legitimate leader and how that was going to play out. But when Trump started bombing those boats with the drugs and start, you know, it was very clever. He started that way. Little boats. And he let the firestorm play out about that. And then all of a sudden, boom, the Navy's moving in and we're going to deal with Venezuela. It really was a smart way to get in that position, because people were opposed. The fight was all over one or two drug runners, you know, get killed when they should have been allowed to be rescued at the back of a boat, to suddenly we're, you know, one of the biggest operations in military history. And we take a leader of a country into custody. But I think all of that was about positioning our Navy to make sure that China didn't move its Navy into a precarious position.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just beat China to that.
When you think of the superpower, so it's Russia, China, United States, you know, superpower is, you know, I have military capability, nuclear capability, I have economic capability, and I view the world, you know, each of them views the world in relationship to each other. This is why I believe the Europe is just, they're just sitting there like, I wonder what's going to happen, because we're not a player. We're not really a player, and our future is subject to what happens with these three superpowers. And they are connected, both to the United States, China, and Russia, through economics. And it's all happening, and Russia has tentacles into Europe of selling and buying. They have impact on Saudi Arabia, Iran, what they call the China Road and the Russian Road in the Middle East, that they've established economic situations with. China is the same way. So if we look at what Trump supposedly is doing, is called a renewing of the Monroe Doctrine. And the Monroe Doctrine was, we are going to have oversight and never let any threat come to the Americas, South America, North America, Central America. And so, you know, they did it with Venezuela. He's threatening Cuba, you know, hey, you better shape up here. Greenland, you know, which we'll talk about later in terms of that's an interesting piece of actually, as you look at it and geographically, I know you looked at it this way. It's funny. You see it. It's actually part of North America.
Sure looks like it.
And then Russia's, you know, right next to us, you know. And so I believe that it's interesting, and here's a postulate, is that the Western world, and you said it today or last time we met, was that actually Trump is at what's called Davos. It's a annual conference put on by WEF, World Economic Forum, which we've talked about, is promoting the one world government. I mean, they're openly promoting it. We want to have one world government. We want to solve the problems of the world. And we can do it through one world government. And so they've invited all of these leaders from all over the world to come. Interesting enough, there's very few from Russia and China because they're taking more of a Western perspective of driving it. So here's a postulate. Is all this being done right now, particularly with America, attempting to put China and Russia in a position where they cooperate with the one world government? So in other words, it's this kind of a stalemate that is developed, and that there's threats and there's things, you know, that are done and there's power that can be done. If you look at it then economically, is that, okay, I tell you what, Russia and China, in order to come to a conclusion about this, which might even be Ukraine and might be, you know, Taiwan, why don't we do this? And we'll actually, instead of fighting each other, we'll cooperate together and set up the one world, start to put together the one world government, which includes you. And I believe it has to, because they are there, you know, and they have the power and they have the might and they are a superpower. You can't think of a one world government that excludes them. Then it's not really a one world government, you know. So is this all working toward trying to, who are not currently engaged in the active discussions of one world government, but to get them to the table to actually be part of it? So that's an interesting postulate. Any thoughts about that?
You know, what I thought about was two things. The EU, did the EU, which was a sort of a first step, what was that beneficial to all those European countries or not? Did the EU idea work? The other one is the Soviet Union. Did it work? No. And so it's not like we have a whole lot of examples of big coalitions of countries moving into more central governance working, I don't think. I wonder if there is a group of people that say, absolutely, the EU was a fabulous idea. I mean, you know, the UK pulled out of it last year, 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take that. Think about that. Actually, and it's interesting because I was in Germany literally the day that they switched to the EU operation. In the euro, you know, Germany had the Deutschmark. So on December 31st, I had to buy things with Deutschmarks. On January 1st, I had to buy them in euros. And, you know, just a funny little story is our whole family was there, and we had Linda's family there from Germany. And we were, you know, in this beautiful spot in Bavaria. And we celebrated Christmas and New Year's together. And then on the first day of January, which happened to be not to them, it's not a holiday, you know, it's just a day, you know. And so we had to exchange Deutschmarks to euros. So we get in line, we go to the bank, and we're at this long line of people that, you know, that are all having to do the same thing. Well, there's people in front of us and these funny little old ladies, and they've got these big bags of cash. I mean, and so they would bring it and then they'd put it on the counter and they'd have to count it. And, you know, it's 300,000 Deutschmarks that they had to count out. You know, which took a while. And then they exchanged them for, and they didn't want, see, they didn't have bank accounts because they don't trust the banks. So they literally said, I want the euros, hard euros, and I want to take it back and hide it in my mattress, you know. And it was really hilarious, you know, that it actually happened. But the thought was, hey, let's get unified and be more like the United States to have a power, because individually we're not going to make it. So let's do it jointly. And so they did. And they had a government set up in Belgium to do that, which they still do. There's a couple characteristics about it as to why it didn't really get anywhere. I mean, you know, they function and they have easy to cross borders and the currency is easy to develop between countries. But it didn't really unify them. So I've got some thoughts about that. But do you have any thoughts about okay, they set it up, but they missed a few things. So think about what they missed, and then we can talk about it, because that'll have implications for if truly a one world government comes about, they can't operate like the EU does, or else it won't work.
Well, there are obviously huge cultural implications when you do that. And, think back about the United States. So the United States began as colonies. It continued to emerge as states. And then there was a constitution that created how the states would link to each other. But the big source of tension from the very beginning to the very to today is what are the rights of the states and the obligations of the states and the powers of the states versus the rights and the powers of the central government. We fight about that, but it's been there from the beginning. Yeah. And it was actually designed into our founders, initially that the states had all the power and the federal government only was there to serve a few purposes, like a common currency, the national defense. There wasn't even taxes at the government level, the federal government level to begin with. But we, there is this tendency to want to draw towards more and more federal, bigger and bigger governments. You see it even in the United States, the pressure to say, well, something's not working or it's not fair. Why does that state have something I don't have? Or it has a law that protects this, but mine doesn't. Well, we got to pass a federal law then. We've got to send this out of the states up to the Supreme Court. So there seems to be a desire that, and it's this question of our nature is to seek a higher authority. And I don't know. I mean, most of the regulations in the United States are exist at the state level. But what happens at the federal level, this deep state idea, the agencies with all this power and all this money have been very, very bad compared to what goes on at the states.
Yeah. And the, what I saw and see is that, yes, the EU has a overarching, let's say governing body, but it's a body with no teeth. And that is that France and Germany and Spain and all these countries, they still function independent of that. And their only point of commonality is, we agree to try to have some discussion about debt. We do now have a common currency, which we've accepted. We have borders that are open, we've accepted, but you don't have the right to rule us, and we're not surrendering to your rule, and you can't enforce any rule upon our little country. And so it doesn't really have a major impact because they're not acting in unity in any way to establish a strong economic engine, for example. It's still driven by Germany's engine is more powerful than Italian or Greece, and they don't really come together. If we think about a one world government, and this comes back to Russia and China, is that a true one world government, which we know in scripture happens, it's a willing acceptance of that leadership and their decision making that we surrender to. And we don't have any longer, and we'll talk about this later about democracy, is that we don't even vote them in, or we don't vote different laws, that whatever they say we've agreed to, and we let them run the show. But there's not a opposition to that. I don't like that. I don't want to. We fight it. No, it's a willingly worldwide government. And that's where Russia and China join that worldwide willing government and let the government rule. So I think this movement of all the stuff that's going on is try to positioning a point where they start to invite them into that process. And I believe it's economic. To have them start to recognize, we know you have an agenda from your world power position, which we do too, but isn't it going to be better if, and how about this? And so I think we'll see over the next, 6 to 12 months, starting negotiations about certain things, like Greenland, for example, that, there's a threat, everybody's afraid of a military invasion. I don't think so at all. I think it's going to be set up in negotiation. And hey, well, you do this and we'll do that. And I think it'll include Russia and China. And so I just think that, I think we're the three world powers. We have our own problems. Certain things don't seem to make sense. And how is that going to come about? I think that's our big question as we start exploring it. So as you get more exposure to info about that, we'll think about that of what the heck does this mean? And we do understand it. And interesting enough, EU, which tried to become one, is really not one at all. I mean, they're just there waiting to see what happens.
Well, in a way, they're suffering even from one of the principal elements of that agreement, which is open borders. You see now many, many of those EU countries dealing with what they didn't expect, which was not just people traveling from one European country to another, but now the invasion of unfriendly people that are changing all, the culture of all of Europe.
That's right. Yep. And having the influence into it of changing the economic dynamic of it all, which is interesting that, you know, because of what Trump's done with our borders. And then he's actually encouraging Europe. Hey, you guys better shape up here and straighten out your situation. You've lost the soul of who you are.
Yeah.
And if you don't take care of it, you know, you're going to wind up, you know, not doing which is what we're trying to do. So really interesting discussion. But the question which we'll keep exploring is, okay, we know there's the three superpowers. We are maneuvering, and everything that think about what America is doing, particularly with Trump, is in relationship to Russia and China.
Yeah.
And the Middle East is going to be a target of that, and the geographic, and maybe sometime you could send us a map of that. We can throw it up for everybody. Is if you look at it from the North Pole and the South Pole, it's a completely different viewpoint of geographic where everybody's at. And because of the economic engines and the military engines, we can appreciate that we got these three superpowers that we're all vying for and what's going to happen. And then, by the way, as we talk down the road, what do we think might happen if the next election, which Trump cannot run again, you know, what if it goes a certain direction? Is that going to change everything? You know, and he's got a certain perspective that we're seeing it play out. If he's not there, either a weaker, you know, Republican leader and or a Democratic leader, is that going to change the whole dynamic of it? And maybe that's when we join into becoming nothing. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. You know, so Heavenly Father, we thank you that you tell us to pay attention, that you will give us solutions to enigmas and riddles and complicated questions. These are complicated. We see some of the movement of it all, but we don't know where it's headed. And so may we observe it, may we understand it and participate in what we do know, that it's not going to be a military overthrow. They still exist in the end. So then it's going to be economic, and what does that mean to us? And so we pray for clarity, wisdom, and then how that impacts us, particularly in the short term. We praise you now and thank you in Christ's name. Denny, thank you so much, and we'll look forward to seeing you. Have a great trip to Israel, and we can hardly wait to get a report. And
I'll send you notes while I'm there.
And send me some pictures if you can. And then for you that are listening, you know, I would urge you to go back, you know, to last week and look at the list of things we're going to cover and what questions you might have, and send them in at questions@abideministry.com. And we will look forward to catching up again. And our next taping, I think, is going to be with Eric and Ephraim, which they're going to join you a little bit there. So that'll be an interesting discussion. So join us then, and we'll see everybody.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.